Representative Burley, you have a comment?
Yes, thank you, Mr. Chair. I just wanted to report that last week the U.S. House of Representatives approved H.R. 3, which is the Transportation Equity Act. It passed the House by a vote of 417-9, and I think it's the first step along the way that we need to get some of the transportation dollars going. So it was something we discussed before in the Ways and Means Committee, and I just thought it'd be good to update everybody on that.
Thank you very much. Anyone else before we open the hearing on I'll open the hearing on 2113, and John, you want to tell us a little bit about it?
Mr. Chair, this is a bill that was pre-session filed by ODOT. It deletes certain reporting requirements for the department and also deletes certain required elements that are actually in the statute that relate to the department's accounting and budgetary systems. Among the kinds of reports that it would eliminate would be the director's annual report to the State Transportation Commission. It also, as initially introduced, would transfer the preparation of the biennial vehicle flat fee study from ODOT to DAS. However, I believe you're going to be receiving an amendment today that would remove that provision in the bill. It also provides for new definitions of the term modernization and preservation for the purpose of selecting projects to be funded out of OTIA bond revenues.
Thank you, John. Mike Marsh.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mike Marsh from the Department of Transportation here to present on House Bill 2113. Members have heard a little bit about this, but I wanted to make sure that we could go through section by section and make sure everybody's clear, and if there are any questions, of course, we're open to those. The bill comes forward as a way to change a number of statutes and adjust reports that have come to the legislature as well as to the Oregon Transportation Commission. Some of the statutes were put in place to enhance ODOT's accountability or perception of accountability in past sessions. In other cases, it's not really clear why the requirement was placed in statute. What we seek to do is to streamline the requirements, not to delete a requirement to have accountability, but rather to take out details so that it's clear that we need to bring in information that's useful for the legislature. Moving to Section 1 of the bill, this is a requirement to make an annual report to the Oregon Transportation Commission. The report is to talk about construction activities, issues around the transportation system, and licensing of drivers. It does not address the other divisions of the department, however, and the fact is that the Oregon Transportation Commission meets monthly, deals with the policy issues of the department, works closely with the State Transportation Improvement Program, the STIP, and the agency's budget, approving those, and so the issues of policy and decisions around those are already covered in what the Transportation Commission does. The report requirement does not serve a useful purpose. The second section is dealing with the purpose of a cost accounting system and outlining a cost accounting system. The purpose of that system is to track the cost of doing business, to make sure you can inform decision makers about methods of doing business, and to compute true product cost. The reality is that we're doing that anyway. The statute has a lot of detail in it about how the cost accounting system is to be brought forward. The reality is also that a lot of the language about the different cost accounting structures that have changed in the last several years have not been adjusted in this statute. So rather than adjusting them constantly in the statute, whenever Ways and Means makes a change on the organization or budget structure of the agency, we recommend taking out the detail, leaving the requirement for a cost accounting system, but taking out the detail behind it. Section 3 deals with a requirement to produce a program budget. And the program budget, many of you have seen. This is a program budget you've seen before. We agree with bringing forward a budget like this in order to have a budget that's easier to read. Being a finance professional myself, I know that it can be difficult to read budgets, and it helps communicate to the lay public as well as anyone else what we're trying to do in a simpler-to-read fashion rather than the binders that are in the state agency budget and the process. So it's a helpful piece of information. The challenge is, and the problem is, that the statute sets out details about exactly what will be in that program budget, and those details have not kept pace with the changes in the accounting structure, the budget structure that occurs through the Ways and Means process. So by taking out the details that are included within 2113, it allows us to be responsive to where the legislatively adopted budget actually is rather than where it was. Section 4 deals with the fact that there was an effort made to try to match up the state transportation improvement program, which is a four-year period, with the state budget, which is a two-year period. And the highway construction plan was a way to do that. We submit a report per the statute, which is called the highway construction plan. And that communicates which projects are being worked on and tries to correlate those to the legislatively adopted budget. However, once again, it's very specific about the process for the report. We concur that it's useful to have the information about what's going on within projects. We'd like to focus it on a way, though, that is more responsive to what our customers, the legislature, would like to see in the plan now instead of what existed 6 or 8 years ago. And right now, the requirements actually list what would be in the chapter headings of the report. We'd like to be responsive to changes that occur. Since then, the Oregon Transportation Investment Act has occurred. There are changes in focus on bridge and other areas. We'd like to be able to adjust those as appropriate over time rather than using the old chapter headings. It's also difficult to follow when you have to look through those kind of headings and you're trying to organize and read the report. So we think we can come up working with you an easier to read report than what exists in the statute. In addition, this Section 4 has an additional requirement which would say the governor has to bring forward as part of the reporting process how he would spend additional monies if additional monies were brought forward. The fact is, in the past, we've just indicated that we'd spend the monies on preservation or bridges or whatever the priority might be, but the reality is that the legislature makes a decision about additional revenues that would come forward, such as the Oregon Transportation Investment Acts 1, 2, and 3, which delineate how new money will be spent. So rather than guessing what will happen early in the process when the governor does not have a package coming forward, this would eliminate the requirement and make sure that it's tied into the legislative process when actual measures come forward. Section 5 requires the department to provide a quarterly status report on the highway construction plan. That's this document here, another report that you've received in the past. Again, it's a good idea to communicate quarterly status, and we're happy to do that. We would continue doing so with the passage of 2113. However, this is, again, back to the level of detail that's included within the statute, and we'd like to work with you to determine what the best way to communicate the information in a way that's useful to legislators rather than keying off of old statute. The last part of Section 5 deals with ORS 192-245, which in essence aligns and discusses how reports are to be distributed. This statute from 1999 indicates one way. The legislature has passed a statute since then that says all reports coming to the legislature are to be handled one way and are distributed a certain way. This makes the current law in alignment with a new law from the legislature. Section 6, Mr. Chair, relates to another statute that's redundant. House Bill 2113 would delete the language in 802.020, which requires the department to seek approval from the legislature before acquiring an office building. Right now, there are three sets of statutes that require us to go through that process. There's a planning process. There's the process of getting approval for a four-year construction plan that the legislature must approve. There's the Capital Projects Advisory Board, which is in statute and requires us to seek their approval and receive their approval before we move ahead with a capital construction project. And lastly, there's, of course, the capital construction expenditure limitation, which is required before you can move ahead on a project. So those four pieces of statute already exist. There's no need to have this separate piece, which was established in 1983 before a lot of those statewide requirements were implemented.
Mike?
Mr. Chair, yes.
Why do you have to take it out, though? What difference does it make if you have to get the permission anyway? Why not leave it in there?
Mr. Chair, the only reason is while we're cleaning up other statutes to take out something that's redundant and doesn't add any value. This wouldn't be the main purpose for our seeking 2113, but while we were at it, we thought we'd take out things that are already covered elsewhere in order to focus our accountability and be able to make it clear what does need to be provided to the legislature. Section 7 relates to certain types of vehicles who are in off-road situations, snowmobiles, all-terrain vehicles, boats, airplanes, all these types of vehicles receive and use gasoline in order to function. And what the bill would require, what the current statute requires, is that we send in a report on just the snowmobile component. Rather than talking about any reports for the other areas, it does require a report for snowmobiles. Again, the reporting process about that is that we go into Ways and Means Committee, like we did just a few days ago, and discuss the accounts and how they were calculated and what's expected in the budget coming forward and the governor's recommendation, and then the legislature through the Ways and Means Committee approves those amounts. Rather than having a separate report on snowmobiles, we suggest taking that piece out. We already do the report through the discussion with Ways and Means, but rather than submitting yet another thick report to the legislature, we could save some by just making sure it's focused on the Ways and Means accountability. Section 8 deals with the approval to was issued in 1999 to use cameras in photographing drivers who run red lights. And in 1999, it was viewed as a pilot project. They said, let's evaluate it, see how things are going. The reporting process was to go through ODOT, and we were to develop an executive summary to determine how that worked. The legislature made the decision, however, in 2001 to make the authority permanent, and not only that, but expanded it in 2003 to any city with a population of 30,000 or more, plus the city of Newburgh. So now it's the legislative policy decision is to move ahead with this, and rather than have the continual reporting by ODOT on the subject, to eliminate that requirement since the decision has been made by the legislature to continue that. I did want to point out that Senate Bill 153 is coming forward in this session of the legislature and would expand to radar the same kind of reporting process. If Senate Bill 153 did pass, conflict amendments would come together to put it in alignment with House Bill 2113. Section 9 deals with the State Rehabilitation Fund for rail, and this is a fund that has not had any money appropriated to it since it was initially brought into existence in 1985. Rather than having a separate account that's listed in the statute that we constantly report, plus to have an annual report on something that does not have any expenditures in it, seems appropriate to eliminate that annual report. And like the chair was mentioning on the prior one, it doesn't hurt to have this kind of thing in statute, but it doesn't serve any purpose either. So while we're trying to update the statutes relating to ODOT, it seems appropriate to take out a report on something that does not have any funds. Section 10, we're suggesting this component be removed from the bill, as your committee administrator has indicated. We brought this forward as a way to shift the responsibility for what's called the flat fee study. The members have heard a report on the highway cost allocation study. A related study is of flat fees, which are for trucks who have the option to pay on a flat fee basis instead of weight mile tax. We've transferred to Department of Administrative Services the responsibility for the study on highway cost allocation. This is a related subject. We thought we'd transfer it also to DAS. The trucking industry has indicated they'd rather have ODOT retain that responsibility. We're okay on retaining it and would suggest that amendments to take out Section 10 be allowed to move forward as part of 2113. Section 11 is a change in the bill necessary to accommodate changes in Section 1, which deal with the definitions of preservation and modernization. The definitions were established through the cost accounting statute with adjustments we're making through 2113. It would remove the definitions, so we're suggesting that those same definitions be put in this section of the bill in order to maintain a definition for the ATIA statutes. And Section 12 repeals four statutes, Mr. Chair. They deal with detailed requirements for expenditure limitations is the first one. This is, again, looking back at requirements about expenditure limitations, which were enunciated in 1999. The Ways and Means process, however, has moved forward. There have been changes made in the expenditure limitations, and those have not been incorporated into the statute. The legislative decision about expenditure limitations is made through Ways and Means, and this allows that to continue without having to have a redundant or section of statute that's not keeping pace with the actual decisions each session. The second one relates to the number of limitations and the fact that we got a requirement to have more detailed accounting for our processes, which was the right thing to do in 1999. Making that major shift for ODOT, however, resulted in the legislature and the agency feeling like maybe there was a need to have some cushion in each account in order to make sure that there was a 5% leeway that could be allowed for on overage of an expenditure limitation. If, for instance, expenditures went up significantly in bridge, that there would be an opportunity to come back to the session if you're within 5% later on and get that adjusted. The reality is that we've been able to work around that through forecasts, and we don't need to have the extra cushion of being plus or minus 5%. So we suggest that that can come out of the statute. If the members decided to keep it, that's fine. But again, it's not something that we require in terms of managing and coming back to you for accountability. That element of the statute could be removed. The third section under Section 12 deals with the requirement to have a report on highway safety and requires us to make that report to the legislature to indicate we've spent at least $100 million as part of the governor's recommended budget that on items that relate to safety. It's obviously our number one priority as an agency. Safety is very important to the agency. It's involved in the vast majority of our projects. However, going in and determining exactly what the dollar value of safety in a particular project is does take time and money. It's not really having a great return on the investment. We feel like safety is critical, but determining how much of a modernization project or a preservation project or any project is specifically safety is not necessarily time well spent and not representing the taxpayers well in determining how best to use our dollars. So we're suggesting that that come out of the statute. And lastly, Mr. Chair, under Section 12 is the section that dealt with removal on the flat fee study. For the same issue discussed in Section 10, we ask that this portion be removed from the bill in order to not have the flat fee study be shifted. Mr. Chair, that's a quick, I hope, overview of the budget situation and the accounting structures and report structures from the Department of Transportation. We have a sizable budget. We understand the need for accountability. It's critical that we do provide that accountability. However, as things change and as priorities shift, we think it's important to streamline and recognize there are different ways to do it. We want to make sure that we're being responsive but also being efficient. I'm open to any questions.
Thanks, Mike. Questions? Oh, come on, you guys. I can't believe this. You can buy one question? I'll work on some more for later.
Okay, Mr. Chair.
Anyone else to testify on 2113? Close the hearing on 2113.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Mike. Okay, and I'll open a hearing on 2165. Here. And John, give us a little summary.
Mr. Chair, committee members, this bill would establish a statutory local officials advisory committee to advise ODOT and the State Transportation Commission related to the implementation of laws and policies and the development and implementation of what is referred to as a seamless transportation system. The committee size and duration of terms of office would be set by the commission. Members would be appointed by the commission in consultation with the Association of Oregon Counties and the League of Oregon Cities, and would be required to represent various geographic regions in the state. For a number of years, there has been sort of, if you will, an informal local government officials advisory committee that has been set up through a memorandum of understanding. This bill would place the committee in statute and therefore give it somewhat of a more permanent status and more clearly outline what its intent and purpose is.
Thank you, John. Judge Breyer. Oh, okay. I'll take all three of you. I don't mind.
Mr. Chair, would you rather have us one at a time? Would you rather have us one at a time?
Oh, no. It's
okay.
Just fine.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I'm going to ask Art Slack from AOC if he'd start.
Mr. Chair and members of the committee, Art Slack with the Association of Oregon Counties. And we are here, we are pleased to be here today to support House Bill 2165 and the Dash 1 amendments that I believe you all should have at this point. With me today, as you've already acknowledged, is Judge Laura Pryor. She is the chair of our Transportation Steering Committee, judge and county judge, and also a chair of an act. And also with me is Commissioner Don Lindley from Lincoln County. Don has been a member of our Transportation Committee. He is a member of LOAC currently and has been for a number of years. And he also chairs an act in the state of Oregon at this point. With that introduction, Mr. Chair, if with your indulgence, I'd like to walk through the Dash 1 amendments to 2165. These amendments have been drafted based on discussions with the Department of Transportation, the Governor's Office, and with LOC and AOC. We've had some discussions about the original draft, and there were a few concerns that were identified, and we've drafted these amendments, or the amendments are presented to you on our behalf in support of the bill. Call your attention to Section 1. Which provides a statement of findings by the legislature that it is in the public interest to bring the owners of the state highways, county roads, and city streets together to ensure that the interconnected system of highways, roads, and streets functions in an efficient and effective manner. Cities and counties in the state own all the roads in the state other than those few private roads that exist out there. But we at this point are the owners and managers of the highway system that everybody enjoys. Further, that the Legislative Assembly finds that it is in the public interest to have the owners of the highways, roads, and streets work together to develop a multi-session plan and program addressing the needs for maintenance, preservation, and modernization of a seamless, interconnected system of highways, roads, and streets. We really haven't had a statement like this to bring the three parties together and to focus their attention in a way. And we believe that this statement by the legislature would go a long ways in helping focus cities and counties in the state in the management of the highway system. In line 4, we've just deleted the reference to Section 1, and it becomes Section 2. On line 6 of the bill, we have deleted the reference to local government, but inserted and in its place that cities and counties in the governor's office would work to develop in the development, operation, identification of needs, and financing, again, of an interconnected system of highway, roads, and streets within the state. I think if you look at most people, they don't know when they're on a state highway, a county road, or a city street. When they're going from point A to point B, unless they get on the interstate system. They just don't recognize the difference, but yet there is responsibility and for the management of those systems, and we need to do it together so it is efficient and effective and serves all the citizens of the state of Oregon. To address a concern about the committee and the formation of the committee, you'll see that in Section 2, or Sub 2, we have suggested that the committee be composed of four elected county commissioners or county judges designated by the Association of Oregon Counties, four elected either city mayors or city council members designated by the League of Oregon Cities, and then one member of the Transportation Commission designated by the Commission, the Director of the Department of Transportation, the Governor's Transportation Advisor, and the Governor's Local Government Liaison. That provides a committee of 12 with four county, four city, and four representatives of the state to come together in the manner that we've outlined at this point. This is a smaller group and a more focused group than the local officials advisory committee that has been functioning in a sporadic manner since the original memorandum of understanding was adopted in 1978 or entered into in 1978. On line 20, we've added two additional statements in terms of direction for the committee to look at in terms of their responsibilities. One is to explore, or item D would be to explore joint venture opportunities on state and local transportation projects, including cooperative programs and joint facilities, and make recommendations to the commission. That would be the Oregon Transportation Commission, or to local governments, either city or counties, with those respects. Item number E would be to review, analyze, and provide recommendations for financing of the state's interconnected system of highways, roads, and streets to the commission and to the governor. Throughout these amendments, you'll find reference to the interconnected system, which we feel is extremely important at this point. We think that the Dash 1 amendments strengthen the bill and provide additional focus, and we offer those to you with our support. Don?
Thanks, Art. For the record, again, my name is Don Lindley. I'm County Commissioner in Lincoln County. That's a position I've held for ever, I think. 1990, I guess. First of all, I was sharing with Representative Boone before the meeting some good news, and I never thought I would ever say this, but it's raining hard on the coast. And normal years, that would not be any news. That would just be normal. But certainly this year, it's not. So, as Art indicated, I currently chair the what's called the CWAC, which is the Cascades West Area Commission on Transportation, and that's for Lynn, Benton, and Lincoln counties. And I think this is about the third time that I've chaired that group. And I also serve on the LOAC, the current LOAC, and have served on the LOAC for a number of years as well. This bill, likely the department will say, is redundant in that we have a local officials advisory committee in place currently, and there's really no need to put it in statute. But for the record, I'd say that we probably have had over the years at least half of the meetings canceled for one reason or another. And the agenda for those meetings is really established by ODOT staff. And we think that the bill outlines some bigger issues, some more, maybe some more important issues than we've dealt with in the past, although we have dealt with some important issues, certainly as a part of this group. Also, I'm guessing that the department will also say that it's somewhat redundant because we have ACTS. The ACTS I support very much. I've been active from the beginning in our particular act, but it has a different role. It plays a different role in the whole scheme of things. We work closely with the regional and area managers. We developed a regional priority and regional projects. We work on STIP projects that relate to our area. And I see the LOAC, as the language in the bill outlines, having a much different role, a more global role, and bringing the partners together from cities, counties, and the state to work in a better way, a more efficient way, look for other opportunities for funding, whatever that might be. Finally, I guess I would say that I think it's very appropriate for to elevate this committee. Certainly, this body did that with the Freight Advisory Committee, and I think it's certainly appropriate for local government and the partners in the statewide system to have that same kind of elevation. Lastly, I'd say that as far as I know, there's no physical impact for this bill. The department is currently providing some resources to facilitate the meetings. I'm assuming that those resources are still there and would continue to be there to facilitate the committee in the future. With that, I'll turn it over to Laura.
Thank you, John. For the record, my name is Laura Pryor. I'm the Gillum County judge. I chair AOC's Transportation Committee, and I have for quite a few years, and I also chair the North Central Act. I originally got involved in transportation because I come from one of the state's smaller rural counties, and the needs are very different in those counties than it is in the more urban areas. And we needed to become involved so that we could begin to have a voice and speak. I think that looking back, the reason that we brought this bill forward, as I look back over quite a few years of doing this, is because things have evolved. Things have changed. A good example are the acts. At one time, that was a very new idea. It was a new approach to doing business with transportation. And it brought everybody together. It was a new way of thinking about it. And gradually, over time, I think we've seen where instead of being in our isolated silos of doing things, we've gradually moved together to trying to look at the major systems that run our society in Oregon in a more coordinated, organized manner. And I think that is one thing that is driving this proposal that we're bringing forward. Actually, we had another bill that I think all of you are aware of, and we started out there. Thinking about adding two people to the Transportation Commission, a city representative and a county representative. And that was really probably too radical a step, you know, to try to get done, or maybe it wouldn't even have worked very well. And so we took a step back and we thought, what is it we're really trying to do? And is there another vehicle that we could find that exists now that would serve the purpose? And obviously LOAC came to the fore in our thinking very quickly, because almost all of us that deal with transportation have been involved with LOAC one time or another over the years. And the more we looked at it, the more we thought about it, the more we thought this is probably a very good vehicle, because we're not really creating anything new. We're taking a new approach to something that already exists and hopefully making it a better tool for everybody. The thing that we're all up against, no matter which partner we're talking about in the ownership of the system, is how do we face the problems that we've got? We haven't had a gas tax increase since 91. All of you know that as well as we do. You, the legislature, and ODOT have been trying to tackle a huge project, huge issues like the bridge problems. And now you'll be facing the multimodal issue. But still, basically, we've still got that base infrastructure that was really created first in Oregon, and that was the land transportation system, the roads, which became streets and became highways, and which actually access all the other modes. So when you think about how it functions now, you folks are the budget committee for the Department of Transportation, and you set policy along with the department, the commission. The cities and counties come every year and a half, every 2 years in here to talk to you like this for half an hour, maybe, to try to give you snapshots of our part of the system. We believe that it would be much more effective for all of us if the owners of the system, just the street, road, and highway system, had a vehicle where we could come together and we could talk about the functioning of the system, how it functions, how we could use it better. If we're not going to have more money, we've got to find ways to make what we've got work better. And to do that, we've got to talk to each other. And it's too easy it's too easy not to do that the way it is now, because we're really siloed. These are cities' streets, these are county roads, and this is ODOT's highways. So if we could have a vehicle where we could come together to talk about those larger issues, how are we going to deal with this system? That would be very helpful. And I have to think, although I don't sit on your side of the table, I have to think it might be a little bit more helpful for you, because you might be getting a better picture then of an entire system instead of the pieces of the system. So that really is what has driven this legislation coming before you today. It's not a desire on our part to want to dictate to the Department of Transportation what they do with their system, any more than we'd want them dictating to us what we do with our county roads. But what it is, it's simply a facilitation. It's a vehicle to begin us to move forward to getting a more coordinated communication system and try to solve problems together. And I have to believe that's in everybody's interest. If there is any additional administrative cost, the Association of Oregon Counties is perfectly willing to help share that cost, whether it's staffing the committee or you know, whatever it may be. So that really is our story about why we're bringing this forward, and I'd be glad to answer any questions.
I have a comment and question, I guess. So I sat down with both sides on this issue yesterday and didn't really commit either way to either one, I don't think, at the time, because I have very mixed feelings about this, because I'm not sure. I know it's not working now. I mean, there's a definite lack of communication between them, but I also live in a county that all the cities are upset with the county because they won't sit down and do a consolidated or coordinated planning effort in that area. So I know it happens at all levels, and somehow we need to fix that. The other thing is, I think as a legislature, we kind of tie ODOT's hands in how they communicate and what they do. Mm-hmm. Sitting at the table last session on OTIA 3 negotiations, I don't think it's ODOT that was keeping your part of it down. I think it was the legislative members that pretty much dictated the process. So when it comes to, I don't know whether this is going to accomplish what we want, but somehow we have to do that. And whether it's one of the things I'm wondering about is reporting back to us, if you have any thoughts on whether that should be done, how that should be done, about the coordination process. Because we haven't really, I mean, we haven't heard this. I think we know, you know, at least the ones that have been around, we've known that there's a little bit of a problem there. But it's not, you know, it's not something we sat and talked about or got a report on.
Chairman Gilman, Representative Beyer, I'll take a crack at that. And then I'd like to make a comment about your first comment. I think that it's appropriate that we would report back to you, because if the concept of having an overview of the entire system, if that concept is correct, then it seems that it would be wise to have the three jurisdictions report back to you so that you would have a better picture of the overall system. I also think that it would help the cities and the counties with their difficulty in communication as well. Because if you are recognizing that we've got one system, that makes it more important for all of the parts of the system, not just the counties and ODOT, but the counties and the cities, to be able to have that same dialogue and that same communication. Because it's going to be more important as time goes on for us to have that with each other as well, and not just with ODOT. And then I'd like to make just one comment, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, about what Representative Beyer said first. And that is this. I don't believe that the counties, and I'll just speak for myself as chairman of the AOC Transportation Committee, I don't think we've ever believed that ODOT kept us out of the discussions on the bill. I think everybody in this room knows that it was very complicated. It has been for three sessions. You've got the truckers on one hand threatening ballot initiatives. You've got AAA on the other hand doing the same thing. You've got the governor's office and ODOT trying to negotiate and move through that whole scrambled arena. And then you've got major issues, which is, you know, if you accept everything that was said, major problems with all the bridges in the state of Oregon, which is a huge crisis facing ODOT. Counties had some bridges with problems. Cities had a few, but the major issue was with the ODOT bridges. And now you're facing the multimodal issue. The modes haven't had money, and I don't know when. So these are huge issues. So I don't believe that AOC has ever thought that ODOT kept us out of discussion, and certainly not the director of the department.
Thank you.
Further questions?
Mr. Chair?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Basically, first of all, thank you all three for the testimony, and we met earlier today as well. And I basically have heard three sort of primary arguments in favor of this, and I want to address one of them. The points, I think, as long as I make sure I'm on the right page, and probably the emphasis is to make this holistic rather than piecemeal and get rid of the sort of the silo effect. Another rationale or argument in favor of this I heard was meetings being canceled, so there's a communication problem. But the third one that I want to address was made earlier on, and it was, and I'll ask ODOT the same question, but was the reference to ODOT setting the agenda, ODOT staff setting the agenda for the meetings when they do happen. And my question to you is, however you want to tackle this, do you believe that, yes or no, and if yes, what are they? Are there fundamental differences or interests between the cities and the counties and ODOT? Is it merely just a communication and a structure issue, or are there fundamental, tangible differences between the groups?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Brown, I think there are fundamental differences in that ODOT has the system that they have. They've been charged with taking care of and responding to for a very long time and reporting directly to the legislature. I mean, the way it has been historically set up is the way it's been functioning. So from the standpoint of, are there fundamental differences? Yes, I think there are in the reporting structure and what's expected, you know, how they're supposed to deal with it. From the standpoint of fundamental differences, I don't think we're all taking care of road surface one way or another. So the requirement by the people, the citizens that we all serve, is basically the same. They all expect whatever that road is out there. Most of them don't even know, unless it's very obvious that it's a city street. So that would be my answer to that. And I think ODOT's responsibility for LOAC has been ODOT's responsibility. It never was our responsibility. It was theirs from day one. And their focus was developed for them. What we're asking for is a change in that structure that has been historic structure that they have been fulfilling from their perception of what it was they were supposed to do. I don't know if I answered that question.
Well, I just want to kind of follow up real quick. So what you're saying, these are not policy differences. These are communication and structural issues. They're not fundamental differences in policy direction that's driving this, in your opinion.
I would, Mr. Chairman, Representative, I would say 90% that's correct.
Okay.
I do think we have some policy differences, but it comes out of the historic perspective.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Do you have a comment on that first?
If I may, Chair Gilman, Representative Bruin, I want to be clear and fair as to how this all comes about. ODOT communicates with AOC and LOC about putting items that should be on an agenda, okay? And that happens more often than not, real close to when the meeting's going to take place. Okay, and in those conversations, we can identify three or four things, and then we also say, well, what's coming up on the OTC's schedule? What are these things that are in your work program that we should be talking about so that we can provide some meaningful input before they get to the commission? And there's where we have a void, because, and don't get me wrong in this, sometimes the department in doing its work programs and planning doesn't identify the need to make those touches with local government, and we find out that, well, there's not adequate time, it's on the commission's agenda, that, you know, for in a week. Well, we can't get LOAC together in a special meeting because we haven't put this all together. So part of it is a joint problem, but it's also a problem in terms of, as the department is looking at putting its work programs together and other kinds of things, that it, my observation, it doesn't account for LOAC and making those touches with local government and providing for the opportunity for input. If this bill passes and it's in statute, at least I believe that the opportunities will be greatly enhanced.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess I, too, am kind of struggling with this, and I don't have the benefit of prior experiences Representative Byer does with some of these things. But, you know, first of all, I mean, I want to make it very clear. I do understand the fact that, you know, we've got this interconnected system of highways, roads, and streets, and there's different ownerships and all that, and I do think it's important that we all work together on this. But I have to tell you, and, you know, I deal with this a lot in the resource arena that I work in my real life, and that is a lot of collaborative efforts and all this stuff. And what I've found is that you can't regulate collaboration. You can't make people come to the table and work together if they don't want to. So I was listening with great interest on why we need to elevate this to a statutory committee, and the only thing I heard was because we already have one for freight advisory. And I'm not sure that that's quite good enough justification. So I'd like to give you an opportunity to comment on that again.
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burley, that really is a great question because we struggled with this too. On one hand, we're here saying that we'd like to do this, and the department has said they don't want to do it. So we're in the position of saying, well, we're trying to ram this down your throat whether you like it or not. The other side of that from our perspective is that if you elevate this, we have a memorandum of understanding now, and it's been operating for quite a long time, and it sputters and fizzles, and sometimes it goes along really well. It's pretty dependent upon the goodwill or the interest of the current director, the current governor, the current director, chair of the Transportation Commission. The hope is that if you elevate it to this degree, that everybody, all of us, will pay more attention to it, put more energy into it, and make it a better tool. Right now, in our opinion, with the things that the county system is facing, we believe that to solve the problems, we've got to have a tool, we've got to have a better vehicle for us all to do planning together and try to do problem solving together. And this is one way to do this. And the acts have all, and do some of that, but the acts have all kinds of players. They have ports and truckers and airports and rail and bike people and transit and all of these interests within the regions. But there isn't any focus there just on what were the surface transportation, the roads, streets, and highways that we're trying to get at here. If the timber safety net doesn't go, and with the balance of payments where it is, we're still in a war. You know, the national debt, as the pressure becomes greater in Washington, D.C., our ability to get that done is more problematic, which is really more of an impact on the counties. So if the county, and that's really what we're looking at, you know, we are going to hit the wall someplace out here. And we'd like to try to get ahead of that in problem solving. So what we are hoping that this becomes a better tool for us. We refer to the freight advisory because we could also refer to the Forestry Advisory Board or to LCDC's Advisory Board or something like that, and we probably, you know, should have done that better. But that really is what we're after. We're trying to find a tool for problem solving.
Further questions?
I do. Any other comments on that question? Specifically with regards to the Dash 1 amendment, your proposed language for Section 1, this would be found on page 1, lines 7 through 10, talk about working together to develop a multi-session plan and program addressing the need for maintenance, preservation, modernization, etc. To me, this clearly identifies a product that if we were to adopt this Dash 1 amendment and the bill, the legislature would be saying that we're going to create this statutory advisory committee for the purpose of developing a multi-session plan and program. My question is, if we were to agree with that, would you be willing to agree to a date and a sunset on this so that the committee comes together, the advisory committee comes together, everybody works, spends 5 years, develops this multi-session plan and program, and then we sunset it?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, ordinarily I would make the argument that it probably ought to be there for a while because you can't predict with all of the national things that are going on what would happen. And I would love to see us keep a tool there if it proves its worth. But I will say this. You want to try it? Let's try it and see. If it doesn't work, we can always go back to the way it's functioning now. But if we could do it in a spirit of cooperation and thinking about using it as we hope that it can be used, then it can do its work. If it proves its value, then everybody's going to want to keep it. If it doesn't, I guess we just, you know, go back to wherever we are at the time.
Okay, a couple other questions on page 2. What is the proposed new subpart D, lines 4 through 6? Talks about exploring joint venture opportunities on state and local transportation projects. And if you look at the proposed language for Section 1 and all the discussions so far, we've been specifically focusing on highways, roads, and streets and not airports and ports and rail and bikes and all this stuff yet. The language in proposed subpart D talks about transportation projects, which includes everything. So is that what you're really looking for?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burley, hopefully out of focusing on the surface, streets, roads, and highways, you will begin to see some other things that could be done that might alleviate some of that, which would mean, in just my opinion, is then you would be able to go to the ACT or whatever and get their expertise or move it wherever it needs to move, focusing on the streets, roads, and highways first. Because that, and it's, you know, you think about the whole system. For instance, the bridges. We were all worried about the bridges, and we still are. But when you come off of a bridge, you're on a street, a road, or a highway. You still got that base foundation system. Mm-hmm. If you're in multimodal, it's the same thing. You come out of a port, you're going to come out on a street, a road, or a highway. The airports and say anything you think of leads you back to that foundation system. So if it would be more helpful to restrict this in this section as well, we could certainly do that. The thought was that you put that there so that you're not cutting off your thinking if you need it.
Okay. Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, I might just add that I think there are certain counties, certain cities, certainly, that have other responsibilities for other modes, and we don't want to eliminate any opportunities to discuss ways that we can work closer together. For example, this morning I serve on the board for our transit district. We were dealing with transit issues. So even though the lion's share of our resources goes to surface transportation, we're involved in other forms of transportation as well. So I think we wanted to be a little more global than focused, at least have some opportunity to have those discussions too.
One last one.
Sure.
Sorry.
No, don't apologize.
Also, subpart E, lines 7 through 9 on page 2, which is, if I'm understanding, reading this correctly, is proposed new language also, talks about making recommendations for the financing of the highways, roads, and streets. And I'm curious, if is this being redundant with the road user task group or force that we've had going on?
Mr. Chairman, Representative Burley, I don't think so. And I've been on Rough Tough. I've been sitting there. So this was in my mind, you know, when we were talking about this. Plus, knowing that as time goes on, the legislature is probably going to be examining some things, whether it's VMT or congestion pricing or something. What we thought would be helpful is if ODOT and the cities and the counties are working on this, and these different opportunities or funding recommendations come forward, we'd have a chance to talk about it in terms of how would this work. One of the things that's incredibly important about doing this is recognizing how different the system works all across the state. In my part of the state, it works much different than it does down here. So when you're talking about whether it's studded tires or VMT tax, or it's going to affect different parts of the system in different ways depending upon where you are. So we wanted that in there so that as those come up, we could talk about it from the policy point of view and what the impact and how it would work would be before you get into, you know, the firestorm of you folks having to deal with it.
Thank you. Sam Byer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess one of the other questions I have, and I'm trying to remember if you addressed it, but acts. I mean, and are we duplicating anything, or how do you anticipate interacting, or what would you say the relationship there would be?
Representative Gilman, Chair Gilman, Representative Byer, the acts have a lot of players at the table. Almost all the stakeholders in a region are at the table. I'm sure Don finds that true where he is. Certainly is in our act. So when you're at the act, you have all of these interests going on. This is we're trying to restrict it to just that surface system, just the owners of the streets, roads, and highways. Now, how would that interact? I'm sure that it would, whatever would come out as a recommendation from this group would go through the usual process as it is now, and the acts would be included.
Okay, thank you.
Further questions? I have one. Oh, Art, go ahead.
Oh, Mr. Chair, if with your indulgence, I was just going to comment further on Representative Byer's comment or question. And with my, I guess, somewhat limited experience dealing with the acts and also LOAC, I've been much more involved. The acts, their primary function has been to help identify projects and to scope those based on criteria and to give prioritization to those projects. LOAC doesn't do that. LOAC does not look within the state and say this project, you know, has a higher priority than that project or something like that. It's not the role. LOAC's role is more policy oriented, the interrelationships between the owners of the system, and that I see is the primary difference between the two, and unless they're
rules change. I don't see them as being conflicting at all.
Mr. Chair, this is a quick follow-up on that.
Sure.
Since what we're hearing is that LOAC really isn't working, is that what you want LOAC to do, or is that what they're doing now?
Mr. Chair, Representative Byer, we wish that LOAC was looking more at policy issues and questions and the interrelationships than some of the details that might be brought for them now.
Thank you.
All right, let's see. Oh, the bill says you're going to meet six times a year. Did LOAC meet six times last year?
Chair Gilman, and I have to get my calendar out at this point. I believe they did meet at least six times during, if you look at 2004.
And because I'm always one to kind of try to cut through all this stuff, in OTO3, you ended up with a formula of 50% going to the state, 30 to counties, and 20 to the cities. I want to know if that's really the biggest issue that you're concerned about, and I particularly ask that because you have a bill in the legislature right now that would fund cities, state, and counties at one-third each.
Yeah.
Mr. Chair, if I might respond to that. You're referring to House Bill 2731, I believe.
$100.
Yeah, the $100 first-time title bill. Mr. Chair and members of the committee, when we initially asked that bill to be drafted in a 50-30-20 formula, the representative that gave us the note had a condition on giving us the notes so that we could at least have an LC drafted. And his condition was one-third, one-third, one-third. And so that's what you see. And that same representative gave us the courtesy of having the bill or having that LC dropped as a committee bill. And so that's why that bill is drafted as it is. If we were to get a hearing on that bill, you would hear us say that we are comfortable. And if the bill was to be amended 50-30-20, we would be very happy with that.
Further questions? Thank you very much for your time.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
Bruce Warner.
Good afternoon, Chair Gilman, members of the committee. For the record, I'm Bruce Warner, the director of the Oregon Department of Transportation, and thank you for the opportunity to talk about this bill. I guess right up front, I guess I need to state that I believe LOAC is broken, and we need to do something about it. Frankly, I also say, though, I don't think that this bill is the best way to address what needs to be accomplished to essentially make LOAC or some successor organization more successful. And there's a lot of things that were said with the previous folks who testified that I think are spot on. Some of the stuff is a little different, and I'll give you my characterization of those issues. I think it's important to note that LOAC has been around for a while. It was formed in 1978 through a resolution of the Oregon Transportation Commission, and I think it's done a marvelous job over the years in terms of helping the department, cities and counties work on issues of common concern. But I think what you also heard from Judge Pryor and others is that things have evolved over this last 27 years or so, and obviously things are not quite as simple as they used to be, and we're dealing with a number of other issues. And we put together a number, as I pointed out in my first part of the testimony, a number of committees to address specific issues to help us on some of the technical complexities that are required through, for example, federal legislation. You just heard about the Area Commissions on Transportation. It's one of the new ones over the last 5 years or so that have been put in place. And I really want to thank Judge Pryor and Commissioner Lindley for helping us out on taking leadership positions on those acts, because I think they are very, very valuable and done a great deal of work for us. We've established committees, the Highway Bridge Repair and Replacement Committee, to work with the cities and counties to allocate federal bridge dollars to specific projects around the state. We put together local program oversight committees to help cities and counties better deal with the federal intricacies and allow them to move forward with federal projects, because they can often be very, very complex, and there's a lot of rules and hoops you need to jump through. We now have the Economic Revitalization Team, which we're a major portion of, and we're now part of the Community Development Forum that works very closely with local governments and other agencies. And what I wanted to say on page two is that we clearly have a number of committees that we've set up in an ad hoc manner to deal with specific issues of concern, such as the selection of projects that we put in the State Transportation Improvement Program, updating the Oregon Transportation Plan, and things like updating our access management rules, which clearly involve cities and counties and a whole bunch of other interests. And what I'm trying to say is, I think, and if you look at the paragraph right before what the bill does, I think as these various groups have evolved and grown and their roles have become more clear and their responsibilities more clear, I think the role and responsibility of LOAC has become more and more unclear. And I think that's one of the things that you're dealing with right at the moment. And over the past 2 years, I think ODOT struggled to put together agendas for this committee. It is a joint process, Representative Broome, where we work with them to try to develop agenda items. And if there isn't agenda items, we cancel meetings by mutual consent, Mr. Chair. So it is a partnership. The problem is we really don't have shared responsibilities and leadership in this committee, and I think we need to. And I think our partnership needs to change to reflect some of the new advisory committees and the roles of these various groups that are providing much of the advice that we used to get through the local officials advisory committee. So I think you know what the bill does. You've heard very carefully, and it looks like you've read it very carefully. Again, after a lot of thought, what I believe the correct response and the way to deal with LOAC being dysfunctional or not really functioning at the level it should is to create a new group rather than just putting it in law. And my proposal would place the Oregon Department of Transportation, cities and counties on equal footing with each other. And what I'm suggesting is on top of page three is that we put together a committee through an intergovernmental agreement or an agreement, not an intergovernmental agreement, but an agreement between the League of Oregon Cities and the Association of Oregon Counties that says we need to put together a group along the very lines that I think many of the lines that you saw in the amendments that were proposed to you today, to essentially include members from each association, the executive director, I think, of both associations. I think one of the big things that we need to do is we do need to have a member of the governor's office be part of this group, and I think that'd be the transportation advisor for the governor's office, the chairman of our or chair of our Oregon Transportation Commission, and then the director of the department. And I think in order to build, again, this is a committee that is really owned by all of the parties, I think that the chairmanship and the staff support of this committee should be rotated annually between the various parties, AOC, LOC, and the department. And again, each one of those people takes their turn at putting together the agendas. They're responsible for administering the committee and help build the budgets. And I think I agree fully with the folks who were here before that we do need a forum to focus on some of the high-level policy issues that are critical to all of the providers and the people specifically related to roads, highways, and streets. So I have proposed, and I've worked with the League of Oregon City staff, my staff has, to put together an agreement, a draft agreement, to create what I call the State and Local Transportation Leadership Group. And I think we can do that by agreement with the various organizations. And what I would really like to do is to make this organization an organization that really does some value-added work for all of us, and we should not be struggling to put together agendas. So I think that this, if this was accepted by the League of Oregon Cities and the Association of Oregon Counties, that we could move forward and do a lot in terms of building the trust and the cooperation, which I think we all want to have. Because I have a local government background, that's what we need to have in this. And my belief is, I think one of you said, you cannot legislate trust and partnerships. And so what we need to do is we need to roll up our sleeves, we need to work together, and I think we can do that without having something put into law. And my worry is that once you put it into the law, you get all the pertinent notices, minutes, and other things that go along with that, I think it does create an impediment to having some honest dialogues about some of these issues that are of common importance. It also eliminates a lot of flexibility, because we may find out in 2 years that we need to have the MPOs at the table, or we need to have the transit folks at the table to be able to address where we want to go as those three entities. So don't want to have to come back to you to amend the law to be able to insert some of those other players. I think it's something that we, as the cities, counties, and states, should be able to do by ourselves with our own by our own choice. And clearly, you know, this group, if it's functioning at the level, I think it should be reporting to you, should be reporting to our commission, and should be helping give you some of the perspectives from local, city, county, and state government about what needs to be done in transportation. So, again, I've got an option. I've laid on the table. I have worked with the League of Oregon Cities a bit on this, and I hope to have an opportunity to actually sit down with the Association of Oregon Counties and see if there's a way we can do this without having this be put in statute, because I think there are some restrictions, limitations that would not allow us to do exactly what everybody would like. That would conclude my testimony, Mr. Chair. Members of the thing.
Again.
obviously, I mean, tell me how similar you think this is to the your proposal is to the original LOAC agreement, and because obviously, I mean, that's a long period of time and things have changed a lot, but did LOAC work for a while? Did it ever work? Your perspectives there. Also, I asked a question about reporting back to us about the interaction, and so I'd kind of like maybe something from you about what you think of that.
Mr. Chair, Representative Beyer, good question. I haven't been around all the time for the 27 years that LOAC has been in existence, but as a representative of city and county government, I did use LOAC a lot, and I felt that it was a very viable and robust committee, 10, 15 years ago. What has happened, as I said, these special groups and these other advisory groups have taken on a lot of the technical issues and a lot of the other things which came to this committee. And what I saw before was the cities, counties, and state did just what I'm describing outside of the LOAC to start getting to framing some of the larger, bigger picture things. So I would say that, number one, LOAC did function quite well. But again, the role and responsibility was a combination of policy and technical type work. And so 15, 20 years ago, there was a lot more, I think, of willingness to deal with all of those kinds of things at a particular one venue. But as they became more complex, started taking more time, essentially the technical things were shifted over to committees that would deal with the technical things. And then some of the things that were left over from the policy standpoint were really things that we needed to do more in small group meetings rather than having a meeting with both elected and appointed officials who are the city engineers, the public works directors, if I'm being responsive to your question.
And then reporting back?
Mr. Chair, Representative Beyer, I don't remember anything in the charter and the resolution that required them to report to the legislature. Clearly, the whole intent was they were advisory to the commission. So, as actions were taken, those decisions and those recommendations were and still are brought forward as a recommendation to the commission as part of our staff report. And occasionally, the LOAC members themselves will come in and present the positions of LOAC before the commission.
Mr. Chair, can I follow up? And I guess I'm thinking in terms of going forward, but again, maybe part of the problem there is that there was never any reporting back on LOAC to know at what point it was becoming dysfunctional and maybe should have changed. So I guess a comment on that and looking forward, reporting back in some form to us, you know, just in interim at committee meetings, whether in writing.
Mr. Chair and Representative Byer, it's an excellent suggestion. I think one of the things we found out, when there is an expectation that a group, an advisory committee to the commission, for example, is going to report to our commission on their progress or what they're doing, all of a sudden they become much more engaged in terms of making sure that they're doing what was asked of them in the first place. So I think that expectation is not unrealistic, and I think what you're suggesting, and I hadn't thought about that, is if whichever way you do it, we ought to have those reporting requirements in there, which really do hold us accountable to make sure that we're delivering on what we said we would deliver.
Thank you.
Thank you. Yes, Representative Burley.
Well, first of all, Director Warner, I want to thank you for your candor and frankness in your testimony. I think, you know, stating it's broken, we need to address it, and I think your commitment to do that is good. But I guess, and I'll ask you kind of the reverse question that I asked the previous witnesses. You know, constituents have come to us and said, we would like you to set this thing up. We think there's a problem. We think there's a need to work together, get all the owners together and do this. And they very, you know, in this proposed Section 1 language, very clearly articulate what they want to work on. And so even though you addressed the question about statutory advisory committees being inflexible, my question to you is, this is what a group of constituents have asked for. They've articulated it pretty clearly. So what is the downside to having another statutory advisory committee?
And Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, I attempted to try to answer. I think the big issues for me are flexibility, being able to deal with changes and moving this to get the right people at the table if you need to. We don't want to, as I said, have to come back and do those changes statutorily to bring somebody else to the table that we jointly believe is a person who should have a seat at that table. Secondarily, when you create a committee like this, we do need to, it becomes a body that needs to have official public notice, minutes, all of those kinds of things. And what I really hear from the folks that were here before and others is they need a table at which we can sit down in a very frank, honest manner and discuss the future of transportation, how we ought to fund things, and to essentially get some points of view out on the table that, frankly, I don't think we want to all see that the arguments and discussions in minutes of a meeting. You can make them very cryptic, but I think we need to have a forum where people feel comfortable to really argue, get the issues on the table, and then come to consensus, which then moves to another committee or another organization for moving it forward as a legislative proposal or something else. And we have lacked that type of small group. And that's my fear, is I want to make sure it is a small group, because I think you get the group too big, you're unable to have those kind of frank discussions.
Also, the other thing that you pointed out in your testimony was the fact that ODOT has been reviewing the dozens of advisory committees, and in fact this session ODOT has withdrawn proposals to create two more advisory committees in statute. But you also stated earlier in your testimony that with the ACTS and the Bridge Repair and Replacement Committee and all these other committees, they have contributed to some of the problems we heard earlier today. So in a bigger picture, aside from LOAC, what are you doing to review all these other committees and dozens of this and all that stuff, maybe try to simplify the pie here a little bit?
Mr. Chair, Representative Burley, excellent question. I didn't give you this, but if you want this, this is the list of the advisory committees that we deal with currently. And what it pointed out to me is we do need to put some, you know, I guess we're going to hand this out, we do need to put some structure and rigor into making sure that we are not staffing and dealing with too many advisory committees in the organization. The ones I pointed out to you as an example have been very value-added for the department, very value-added for cities, very value-added for different counties. I think there's some that we ought to look at, maybe some consolidations and other things, but there is a number of folks that we need to work with and figure out where is the best place to coordinate and limit, frankly, the number of advisory committees we've had. So your question is something that we're just starting to grapple with, and we've been so busy delivering OTEA that we haven't had a chance to really step back and look at this. So this is really, the first wake-up call to me that we probably do need to examine and make roles and responsibilities clear, not only for LOAC or whatever its successor is, but many of these other organizations we have here.
Wow. This is almost like a school zone. Yep. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. That's all I have.
Does the LOAC currently keep minutes?
Mr. Chair, they do. They do. Yeah, since it's a chartered member of the commission, all those requirements come with it too. And again, what I'm thinking is an agreement between the cities and counties where we can meet, and we don't, you know, if we need to meet the next day to discuss something, we don't necessarily have to go out and give public notice to have that meeting.
Mm-hmm. Further questions?
Thank you very much.
Is this Will? Willie Tiffany.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, I'm Willie Tiffany with the League of Oregon Cities. I think I can be real brief. This issue has been thoroughly covered today. I guess what I would tell the committee is the League of Oregon Cities agrees with all of our friends sitting here. We do, as Judge Pryor and Director Warner indicated, we do need a forum for the owners of the system to have a collaborative dialogue. So we do agree with that. In doing so, we do support House Bill 2165 and the -1 amendments to the bill. But I'll also say we support any alternative, and in particular the alternative that Director Warner laid out in terms of putting this group together. So I guess the only point that I would say from the city perspective is we think it's the dialogue that's important. The form of how that occurs, we leave up to you to determine, but as long as that dialogue is there, we think that's the real key purpose, and I think all the interests here can agree that at the end of the day, that's where we want to be. So with that, I'd be happy to answer any questions, Mr. Chair.
Questions?
Thanks.
Willie, you get off. Thanks. Anyone else to testify on 2165? We'll close the hearing on 2165. Anything from any members?
Well, Mr. Chair, on this particular issue, I tend to agree that dialogue has to happen, and I'm not that particular about how it happens. I just want to make sure that everybody's committed to it happening, and I'd be willing to support whatever people agree on.
I'm curious if Judge Pryor, Art, have you had a chance to review the director's recommendations?
No.
Recommendation?
You did not, and yeah.
No, we have not seen it.
Yeah.
Just the
okay. Anything further? John, anything?
Mr. Chair, I might hand this out while we're all here. This is my first cut at the types of individuals that we might want to consider for speed zone work group. Several of these groups have requested membership on the group. Others I just listed as possibles. If you have any thoughts on any of these groups, or are there any other groups you'd like to have me consult with and consider adding to the group, I'd be happy to do that.
I talked to Representative Berger, and I think it's going to be, she's going to send someone, but yeah, probably won't be herself. And then I want to open it up for committee members. If anyone else wants to serve on that committee, they're welcome. Well, you can lean back this time.
Already on one.
No comments on this, Mr. Chair, but I guess my one comment is timeline on when you're wanting it, whether you're wanting this prior to going to Bend, or whether you're wanting input from Bend before we do something.
It's, Representative, it's up to you, and you'll tell better after you get into this a little bit. I would like to have a recommendation by April.
I think one trip.
Okay.
I really would, because I think this thing is moving maybe even faster than we realize, and what I'm talking about is the whole legislative session. And so I want to get things done as quickly as we can, the ones that we can agree on. And this one definitely has to be one that we bring out, and we get a large majority of vote on the House floor, too, and work the Senate on. Anything else? Sure. Thank you.